Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 26th of November, the day before Thanksgiving. Yesterday, during our open line, someone suggested, you know, you talk so much about the middle class, and the new administration is talking about the middle class, and we're talking about the rich among us. What about the poor? This hour, we will talk about the poor among us, and the news is not very good. Unemployment, 300,000 people losing jobs each month in this country. Food banks are noticing that their pantries are sometimes empty or not as full as they would like them to be. And we will talk about how people are getting by on food stamps, what it means to be poor in America in 2008. I repeat this story just because I was dumbfounded by it, and perhaps you were too. From Platteville, Colorado, where a farm couple had 40,000 people show up last Saturday when they opened their fields to anybody who would like to take vegetables left over from their harvest. They said they were overwhelmed by this and said people obviously need food. We'll talk about food, employment, poverty, this first hour of our program today. We'll have several guests with us. Maura Daly is joining us, Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy for Feeding America, formerly Second Harvest. Maura, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us this first half hour, Bonnie Bellhumer, who is president of Second Harvest of Wisconsin. Bonnie, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
What did both of you think when you heard that story coming out of Colorado? I thought they had made a mistake when I heard 40,000 people.
Well, you know, from my perspective here in Wisconsin, it's just not surprising to me because we have seen similar types of things happen when there is an announcement that there's some free food that may be available. We have just seen throngs of people who have come expecting and needing to receive the food. And need is really tremendous right now with people unemployed, losing their jobs, losing their homes. I don't think I've seen anything like it since I've been in this work, and this is 18 years for me.
Oh, my. Maura, your response?
You know, unfortunately, nationwide, we are hearing reports similar to what you're hearing from Colorado and Bonnie is seeing right in her community as one of our Feeding America food banks in Wisconsin. We hear stories from Pennsylvania to Maine, all the way down in the warmer states in Florida and California, that people are lining up in numbers that our executive directors have not seen in decades, and there's no question that our low-income Americans are facing, unfortunately, what appears to be a perfect storm with a weakening economy, unemployment rates skyrocketing, at the same time that food and fuel prices have already been overly burdensome for the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm. We went through a time in the 60s when Lyndon Johnson gave us a war on poverty. We had books written in that time about Michael Harrington's books on the other America, et cetera. Where is the national attention? It's on the middle class, of course. It's on those who have an incredible amount of money. But where is the national attention on what you have just outlined? This is a very serious problem.
It is a very serious problem, and Feeding America is working very closely with the Congress and hopefully when the new administration gets in place with the new president and his staff on developing an economic recovery legislation that not only helps low-income Americans but also provides some much-needed relief to our food banks. Our system is incredibly overwhelmed at this moment. In May, our food banks reported a 20% increase on average in the number of people asking for emergency food assistance over a year prior, and that was well before we saw some of the even weakening economic trends that we're experiencing this fall, including the unemployment rates, which typically are the single largest contributing factor to increasing demands on our system. So we really are in need of relief in the form of food from the federal government, as well as financial support for storage and distribution of USDA commodities.
Mm-hmm. What is the situation in Wisconsin? We have read that food pantries have half as much food as they need. Some food pantries just don't have much food at all.
You know, we are experiencing some of those same reports. You know, we supply 1,100 pantries, meal programs, soup kitchens, who are really on the front lines of feeding the hungry. And our own distribution is up 22%. The demand has just been so great. And what we're hearing from the programs that are accessing food from us is that they're seeing people they've never, ever seen before, and people who, frankly, were probably considered more middle class, who now find themselves in a situation where they're actually having to go to the pantry or the meal program. More families are accessing the food. Kids, we're finding, standing in line with their mom or their dad, or even kids at those meal programs. It's just really a sad plight, and we really need to do all we can, and we're trying to do everything we can to make sure that there's adequate food available.
And I would imagine that people would like to be able to give and are giving. Is it that they don't know about the need, or is it that so many people are hurting that they can't afford to contribute to the pantries?
Well, you know, the main source of food that we access as Second Harvest is from manufacturers, wholesalers, retailers, farmers, and that segment has really cut back on what they are giving, and for many reasons. I mean, the most obvious is that the grocery industry is equally as stressed as anyone else, and they're trying to keep their costs down, and so they've reduced as far as they can any mistakes they've made. Those mistakes have always been the source of food that we've received, whether it's a mislabeling of a can or pulling the product off the shelf that are close to the code date or short fills, things that they really have not been able to sell through the traditional methods. They've donated. They have less and less of that. And then in addition to that, because they also are strapped for cash, they're selling what they do have available to places like the dollar stores or the big lots, where they can actually generate some cash for the product that they have available.
Mm-hmm. What about the federal food stamp program, Maura? Have we expanded that? Is that a source of food for a number of people who don't have much?
The food stamp program is certainly vital to fighting hunger in America. Well, it's critical to the low-income Americans that we serve, as well as right now 29.5 million people who are receiving food stamps, which is a record level.
29.5 million people,
which is up about 2.5 million people over a year prior. So we are seeing record levels of enrollment in the food stamp program, which means that the economy is certainly having an impact on enrollment in the program. While that's great that people are getting into the program who are eligible, we also know that still only 67% of Americans who are eligible for the program are receiving benefits. And there's many reasons why. The food stamp program historically has struggled with numerous barriers. Most notably is that most people who are eligible are unaware that they are eligible, or they perceive a low level of benefits and therefore don't feel that actually going through what's often a rigorous application process is worth completion in the end. So we are putting a much larger emphasis on that as Feeding America with our 206 member food banks, to get as many people as possible who are accessing the Charitable Emergency Food Network in contact with federal programs that they're eligible for, including the food stamp program.
And in some cases, from what I read, it is a whole lot of trouble to go through this process for getting very few benefits. Do we need to increase the number increase a poverty level here, or how do we get people to feel as though it's worth their while to go through the trouble of applying for it?
There's no question that the poverty level is a little outdated. Today, for a family of four, the poverty threshold remains right around $21,000. It's hard to imagine a family of four living on $21,000, I would imagine, for any of our listeners today. So these are individuals who are really living on a very, very modest income that are receiving food stamps. One of the populations that has the lowest rate of enrollment in the program are seniors. And the reason for that is seniors are typically eligible for the lowest benefit available through the program, which historically has been $10. However, we did see a milestone in the Farm Bill legislation enacted on October 1st of this year, which raised the minimum benefit for the first time in the history of the program. And so we are hopeful that with the policy changes that the Farm Bill is bringing, that we will also see further enrollment in the food stamp program.
We welcome phone calls for our guests, and let's take them in a moment here. We have two guests with us the first half hour. Maura Daly is Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy for Feeding America, formerly Second Harvest, and Bonnie Bellhumer is President of America's Second Harvest of Wisconsin. Those of you listening around the state and beyond probably know what the situation is. Many of you in your communities, are you helping to give food? Some of you may find yourselves in a situation where you don't have enough food. What are you doing to be able to feed your family? What policies do we need in place to make sure that people are not hungry in America? And do we need more national focus on the poor among us rather than just the middle class and the very wealthy? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, the email address here is talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. We hope to take your phone calls in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about hunger in America this hour of the program, Poverty in America, and welcoming your phone calls. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that at talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Maura and Bonnie, there are many well-meaning people who are public radio fans and, of course, step up to the plate for a number of different causes. What is it that maybe we just don't have as much knowledge as we need here, but what is it that just regular people who still have jobs and decent incomes can do to address this problem?
Well, from my perspective here in Wisconsin, we are really putting the call out to individuals to help whatever means they have in whatever way they can. And we are going to be relying more and more on individuals to provide the source of food and money that we can make available, or the money that we can use to make food available to people in need. And, of course, we have instituted a number of ways, but one of the more innovative ways that we like to get out to everybody is our online grocery store. It's onlineharvest.org.
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 Okay.
Where people can actually go and pick out the foods that they would want to donate to a family in need. You can buy whatever. There's probably 80 different items on there, from turkeys and hams to fresh produce, whether it be potatoes or carrots, and you literally buy those items and pay for it with a credit card, and we'll make sure that those items are purchased and given to a family in need. So that's one way that people have felt like it's a little bit more tangible. They're a little bit more connected to the need to help.
Mm-hmm. And Maura, you talked about the perfect storm a little while ago here. It seems to me as though it may be a gathering storm, too, with the number of people who are losing jobs every month. The number of people who are hungry is going to go up, I would think.
It's significantly likely to go up, and unfortunately, it's very difficult for us to get a real-time figure on really what the situation is, because a lot of the data that we're able to access, particularly through government resources, is looking at data in hindsight. So unfortunately, we won't have data telling us what the situation really looks like for several months down the road. But what I can tell you is that historically, our food banks, and like Bonnie's Food Bank and the 63,000 charitable agencies that we serve around the country, typically see trends long before they're reported in the news and continue to see them long after the news has completed covering the story, if you will, because these things are not short-lived. And with the economic conditions being what they are today and continuing to worsen, and unemployment, as you mentioned, is continuing to rise, it's not likely that the demands for emergency food assistance will go down anytime soon. One thing that I do think is important for your listeners to know is that many of these people that we are talking about that are having to turn to our system, whether it's once a month or twice a month, they're living one catastrophe away from hunger, whether it's the loss of a job, an illness, or a car repair or some other unexpected expense. And these are people that oftentimes are not eligible for federal programs. So when they find themselves in what we call episodic need, there is no other place for them to turn except to our network.
And when you look at it, almost everybody may experience that in a lifetime, right? We all are one episode away losing a job from or a major health situation that insurance doesn't cover. I guess we need to imagine ourselves in the other person's shoes because it could certainly be our shoes.
You're exactly right. And what we're hearing reports of is many of the people that our food banks are seeing in lines are first-time users, and many people who are relying on them once a month are having to rely on them twice a month. Millions of people are simply standing in line waiting for their unemployment benefits to come through because they have no other option between now and then.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you can do that at talk@wpr.org. And we have lines open for you right now, starting with Lee from Madison. Hi, Lee.
Good morning.
Hi.
I think that it's a good idea to say who the poor really are, and that you've been covering pretty well. But what you're not covering is how the helping agencies are funded, and is it enough to rely on individual charitable contributions, and is it a waste of money in some respect to go to the supermarket and pay their prices and then have that food, canned, processed food transferred to the pantries and individual food banks and ultimately to the people who are in need. And I also think that it would be wise to examine the structure of agencies.
Okay, thanks, Lee, for the call. Maura, you want to take that?
Certainly, and Bonnie can comment on this from her mm-hmm. perspective locally in Wisconsin. Our system is one of the most efficient distribution networks that you could imagine. Nationally, for a dollar, we can provide about four bags of groceries. Because we are dealing with predominantly donated food. Now, Bonnie mentioned that we're seeing some efficiencies in the grocery manufacturing industry that are changing the way in which they donate to us and shifting their donations more to the financial side versus the product side, which has forced us to purchase more food. Given that, because of our collective power of 206 food banks, we are able to purchase food at a wholesale price much, much cheaper than what consumers would access walking into a grocery store. So your dollar goes a long way as a donation to a local Feeding America food bank, and Bonnie can tell you what she's able to do with it in her service area.
Sure, Bonnie.
Right. Well, we, of course, part of this Feeding America network, we are also very efficient in the use of money that's donated to us, and for every dollar we can provide five meals to a family in need. And you know, I really want to stress, and I don't disagree with Lee, that when somebody goes to the store and spends that money on something in the store and puts it in the food drive barrel, it is probably the most expensive way to give food. And that's why we also stress that monetary contributions are so beneficial, because with the efficiencies in the buying power that Maura has talked about, we are able to do so much more with that money than ever before. And not only that, but we're really having to do things a little differently than we've ever done before, and we're buying bulk food and repackaging it. So that's it really allowing us to get even further value for the money that we have.
Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Nancy from West Bend. Hello, Nancy.
Hi. Well, I was listening to the man take my name. I guess you talked about one of my questions, and that was the efficacy of putting items at the grocery store. And when I heard your answer, I did think that two things. Sometimes I'm able to buy really, really, really good bargains there, and sometimes I wonder if people, if it's easy for them to access your services in a small town. Also, I wonder if you would highlight, I know it is really important to give food that is very good for people rather than junk food and snacks.
Well, I can certainly respond to that. We always ask for some of the highest need items. Protein is always a very big demand item, so that's peanut butter or tuna fish or canned meats. And then we're always looking for canned vegetables and canned fruit, things that, again, are pretty expensive but are unavailable to those who don't have the wherewithal. Cereal, another really highly desired product, is something that we ask for. And, you know, we do want to provide nutritious food because part of the problem for individuals who are on a limited income is that it's easy to go to a fast food restaurant and eat and fill their stomach, but it's not the most nutritious way for them to eat. So we are always trying to encourage the givers to give us things that are more nutritious.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go next to Sherry from Madison. Hi, Sherry.
Hello. Yeah, first I wanted to thank you for doing this program. It's so nice to have program of something that you hear about a problem you can actually do something about. And I wanted to just ask, see if you could comment on, you talked about the perfect storm of factors that's causing so much hunger in the U.S. And I've read about there's an even bigger perfect storm causing a world food crisis now that you, I don't want this to take away from the problems here because they are real, but just, you know, you hear heartbreaking things about other parts of the world where people that spend 75% of their income on food, and then the price doubles, and they're down to one meal a day instead of two. And, you know, you hear about, you know, four-year-olds that are 20 pounds and things mm-hmm. like that. And so I just wondering if you had any recommendations of how people could, what would be the most effective to help that situation, too.
Okay. Thank you. Maura?
We certainly don't want to diminish the tragedy that so many people around the world are facing with hunger. You know, the difference between what we see in the United States versus what we see in third world countries is we are seeing people here who I refer to as living on the brink of hunger. They don't have the financial resources to provide adequate nutrition for themselves or their families on their own, and sometimes may fall into the category of malnutrition. What you're referring to around the country, around the world, unfortunately, are cases where many populations are living at the malnourishment level on a regular basis and falling into starvation when they don't have access to food, and that's where we see epidemic levels of starvation and people actually dying of hunger. So that we certainly don't want to diminish that very real situation, and food prices in other countries account for a much higher percentage of the household budget by comparison to the United States in many cases. But that's a really complicated topic to dive into here. There are many organizations that do great work internationally, and I would be happy to visit with anybody who's interested in supporting international organizations and provide some information on that.
Okay. Maura, I think we have to let you go. Am I right?
Yep, sure.
Okay. And thank you very much for being with us. Thanks.
Thank you.
Maura Daly, Vice President for Government Relations and Advocacy, Feeding America, formerly Second Harvest. Bonnie is staying with us, and in a few moments we will introduce Melissa Brown, who's Managing Editor of Giving USA, Center on Philanthropy at Indiana University, talking about giving and corporate giving and whether or not it is stalled and what peace corporations and those who want to give are giving right now during hard economic times. All right, let's go to some more phone calls. Lewis is next from Racine. Hi, Lewis.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, how are you?
I'm okay.
Good.
Well, the reason I'm calling is it's not always real facile to get food stamps. I'm a single male and I live on a VA pension. And every year for the past 3 years, I've had difficulty. 3 years ago, I almost lost a dental grant that I get from the state VA because the social worker didn't know my case or something. She made me apply for Social Security to get the food stamps, $10 in food stamps. And that held up my grant because I had to get denied. I had to go through the process. They had to review it, and then I had to get denied. Mm. Well, all that took a lot of time, and I had 30 days to use my dental grant. That's how close I came. She wasn't supposed to submit what she submitted. The second year, I went in, again for $10 a month, and that lady told me that I had to come back with a birth certificate. And I don't like to come back. I wanted to get it all done one time. So I took everything with me. Then she pulls that birth certificate stuff on me. Then, I don't know, during the conversation, she thought that I was applying for something else, and I said, no, all I want is food stamps. So it turned out that because I said that and I made some inquiries while I was there, I didn't have to go back. The last year when I did it, there was a misunderstanding again about what was I was supposed to do or something. It turned out that I didn't have to go in. All I had to do, I did it over the phone. And when I went to the food stamp office here in Racine, she said she was going to leave a paper there for me to sign, and that was it. If I didn't get that paper signed that day, my food stamps were going to get held up, and I was going to have to reapply again. So when I went down there, it turned out that the receptionist didn't really know what I was supposed to sign. She said, just sign what's highlighted, but it turned out that wasn't enough. And I read the form, and so I ended up, because I read the form, I ended up signing some extra stuff that I was supposed to sign, and then it came through. But, you know, every time there's a different caseworker that I have to talk to every year, and it's really hard to get a hold of them people because they don't pick up when you call them. They're government workers, I guess, but you know, you have to call this other number and this and that and the other thing.
Right. Well, you've put a human voice behind what we've read about, that it's sometimes a lot of red tape, right, Bonnie?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's a pretty good example of what somebody has gone through in order to get what really is considered a small benefit for the effort that he's going through.
Right. Thank you very much, Lewis. So that system needs to be streamlined somehow.
Yep.
Yeah. Thomas from Round Lake, Illinois. Hi, Thomas.
Hello. Kathleen, very nice to talk to you. My reason in calling is I would like to refer back to the person who started Second Harvest, John Van Hengel, in the 1967. He took advantage of and utilized the overflow and the waste from restaurants and food stores, basically the dumpsters. And I've been involved with feeding people and helping people. I've been in the food industry many years, and I myself have observed literally tons and tons of waste on a daily basis that goes out in dumpsters daily. And this is not garbage. This is not bug-infested food. This is cases and cases of perfectly nutritious, good food. I myself have helped numerous families by utilizing this resource. It just seems that there are tons and tons of waste that is not being utilized. There was a program on the radio where they were talking about, composting. And they were saying in the Chicago area alone, on a daily basis, there are 200 semi-loads of food from stores alone that goes into the landfills. And this is a tremendous resource that is tragic that it isn't utilized. And in this, and John, when he started out, he would intercept this with refrigerated trucks and utilize it, and that's how he started the whole program of Second Harvest. And a lot of the stores are concerned about liability and things, but the one thing is that this isn't rotten food. No one's going to get sick if it's handled properly because it's perfectly good, nutritious food.
You're not doing that anymore, Bonnie? That...
Well, we are, actually, but your caller is absolutely right. There are still stores, there are still donors who are concerned about liability, despite the fact that there is a Good Samaritan law that absolves them from any liability if they give food in good faith as good food. And we are saddened every day by the fact that there's food available that we can't access because the donor simply is afraid to give it. So we're doing everything that we can to try and educate those donors, to help them to understand that they won't be held liable and that what they are discarding is so vital for the work that we are doing. And we have begun a program called Fresh Rescue, where we go store to store and actually pick up the product that years ago John Van Hengel was so notorious for accessing and starting Second Harvest. But again, there are stores that are not allowing us to get there and pick up that food, and that food is getting thrown away, and it's very sad.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the call. We welcome to the conversation now Melissa Brown. And Melissa Brown is at the Center on Philanthropy at Indiana University. She is managing editor of Giving USA. And she's done a lot of work with the homeless. She worked for 2.5 years as program manager for the Homeless Initiative Program in Indianapolis. She has responsibilities for applied research projects and for researching and writing the annual report, Giving USA, a publication of the Giving USA Foundation. She will join us now and will continue to take phone calls. And Bonnie is remaining with us as well until the end of this hour. Melissa, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen. It's my pleasure.
So I read somewhere, and you had said this, during times that are very tough, charitable giving has been recession-proof. Is that holding true now?
It's very difficult to know the exact situation today. We do know that historically speaking, charitable giving has increased every year except one since 1955. That's measured in current dollars, the dollars you and I spend every day out of our pockets. It does go up every single year.
What was the year it didn't? Do you know?
In 1987, there was a tax law that was passed in 1986 that changed how people could claim deductions.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people pre-gave in 1986. Giving that year shot up 14%. And then in 1987, it sort of went back to the normal rate, but it looked like a decline because it had raised so much in 1986.
Mm-hmm. Does your organization, we've outlined a problem with hunger being a substantial problem, joblessness, a perfect storm here, gathering or already with us, more people losing their jobs, et cetera, food pantries not having much food. Does your organization target, when you realize there's a large need, that you try to put a large amount of resources into poverty, into hunger?
The Center on Philanthropy is not able to do any targeting, but we encourage charities in every type of organization that meets human needs to make the case really explicitly, just as Bonnie has done, to talk about the increased needs and to show how their organization meets those needs. Organizations that can show the public that they really are making a dramatic difference are the ones most likely to be able to raise enough money to continue to provide their services.
Mm-hmm. I know that you've done work with Homeless Among Us, the Homeless Initiative Program in Indianapolis, so you have a sense of what's happening in cities around the country. What do you think will make the biggest difference here to lift, is a huge question, but to lift people out of these dire straits, these straits of poverty? Is it something we just live through right now, or is there enough goodwill around and people who are still making some money that they can tackle this problem?
There are definitely people who are able to tackle the problem. The first need, of course, is to continue to provide the basic needs that people have to have met in order to look forward to any kind of future at all.
Yeah.
The food, the shelter, the warm clothes, having heating costs met. I know many companies take donations, you know, the fuel companies take donations to help people meet their heating costs. That's absolutely critical at this time of year. And when basic needs can be met, then the people can who are suffering these circumstances can get into some of the programs, either run by a charity or in some cases by government, to help them think about what their next steps might be. Mm-hmm. But those basic needs have to be dealt with first.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask both of you, does it appear to both of you now that it is up to the individual donors. It's up to churches. It's up to schools and having food drives. It's up to corporations who may help with programs for taking care of fuel oil or heating for the winter. Is that where the focus is right now, and should it be? Do we need more, as we're looking at governments, to bail out banks, et cetera, and automakers? What about taking care of people who can't eat?
Well, you know, I've always said, and I know that Melissa has just said this, that food is so basic. Without food, people, they have no hope. And they can do nothing else really productive. Kids don't learn. They don't grow. Adults aren't productive in their jobs. And seniors tend to be more susceptible to illness when they aren't eating well. So we certainly hope that individuals who have some means yet will consider the issue of hunger as the place where they can give their money and make a difference. We don't know what the government will do. We certainly heard Mara from Feeding America talk about their efforts at the federal level to try and increase the food and money for federal commodities. But from a day-to-day perspective, those of us who are really on the front lines of doing this, it's those individual donors who are going to help us make it through this crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. Here we're seeing grocery stores, scout troops, many organizations organizing food drives. It's very hard to see that my one bag of groceries would make a difference. But when I go to the market and see hundreds of bags of groceries, each one contributed by a single family, then you start to realize that we can
sure
fill up those pantry shelves.
And I might mention, Kathleen, that the other thing is that with Second Harvest, you're able to use your money in a way that helps leverage more food. And so people should know that when they contribute to an organization that's a member of Feeding America, a Second Harvest food bank, that they are getting more for that dollar than if they were to go to the grocery store, buy it, and put it in the food drive barrel. We can do so much more. And for every dollar here in Wisconsin, we can provide five meals. So we have a very large base of individuals who give to us, and that's really our bread and butter. And without that, we could not do the work that we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Is that true in other areas, Melissa, that contributions, money contributions, are needed to help with heating oil for the winter, keeping warm for the winter, clothing, et cetera?
America Second Harvest has, or now Feeding America, has a unique program with the leveraging. In many cases, companies will match contributions, the heating oil programs. Some of those companies will match contributions received from the public. And in fact, some employers, if a family wants to make a contribution to one of these programs, employers will also match those dollars. So it is a way to increase the value, as Bonnie pointed out, of one contribution by working the systems that allow those contributions to be maximized through other sources.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to phone calls. Bob is joining us now from Sparta. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for taking my call. My question is for Melissa, and I'm hoping that she can elaborate on this a bit. Earlier in the program, I believe it was Maura that had mentioned that they'd already seen a rise in the amount of people applying at the food banks even before the economy went south. What I'm curious about is not so much with Second Harvest, but with the public food banks in general. And the screening process that may go into regards to the individuals that use them. Specifically, I just want to be brief on this, is that with the rising cost of food, and I drive truck, I don't live a high lifestyle. I see the high cost of food, and yes, it's a pain in the butt to pay those prices at the supermarket, but we do because we can do that. We can afford to do that. What I'm concerned with is the person that looks at it and says, you know what, the price of groceries is too high, and I can get my food cheaper by going to the pantry. And to me, personally, I see that as stealing from the poor for whom these programs were intended. And I just want to know how you address that. I'm sure that with unemployment on the rise, you wouldn't ask them for a W-2 or a check stub. You know, I'm not talking about the food stamp program either. My goodness, you could grow food faster than you'd be able to get into that. But I want to know how you screen out those who are just simply taking advantage. And I'll listen to the radio. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. You want to take that, Bonnie?
Well, I'll tell you. Second Harvest of Wisconsin, we serve 1,100 pantries, meal programs, soup kitchens. And we are in those programs every other year. We have to be at least physically in those programs and monitoring what it is they're doing. And they each of those programs has a criteria by which they allow individuals to access the food that they are giving out. And we don't dictate to the program what that criteria is. We don't say you have to bring in a whatever, unemployment check or whatever. But every program is utilizing some criteria where they are feeling like the families, the individuals who are coming to their doors are people who are definitely in need. And we have really found over the years not a lot of abuse of that system. You know, it takes a certain amount of humility to go into those programs. And maybe there's an individual out there who wants to do that and scam the system. But I think if we're going to err, we'd rather err on the side of helping that person than taking away from somebody we think isn't needy. So we have not seen wholesale abuses of the system. We are in every one of those programs, and we just feel as though it takes a special person to be able to even go in there and ask for the food, and that alone already cuts out a lot of scammers.
Bonnie Bell-Humer, president of America's Second Harvest of Wisconsin, and Melissa Brown, managing editor of Giving USA, the Center on Philanthropy at Indiana University, our guests. We're talking about poverty. I'm Kathleen Dunn. The number, I should tell you, is 800-486-8655. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program this Wednesday, a new study of women undergoing mammograms suggests that some breast cancers may naturally disappear without treatment. We'll be talking with the director of cancer screening for the American Cancer Society and with the founder of the Breast Center of Central Wisconsin, our number two of our program. Let's go next to Sharon from Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I wanted to respond to the caller who was concerned about, you know, screening and so forth. And I do work at a food shelf here. And we have done screening all along. Once a family comes in more than about three times in any given year, we will take the time to sit down and look at their real basic budgets, such as housing, transportation, health care, and some of those needs. I think what we're looking at now is, because of our way of life here in this country, you know, cable and internet and cell phones and stuff have become, you know, as common as TVs were back, I suppose, in the... they've just become like basic necessities in some ways in people's minds. And I think what we're starting to do is having to talk with people and ask them to look at their budget and see, you know, for the time being, you know, while you're going through this period, maybe cable is something that would help. You know, if you eliminated that, you could apply some of that money towards food. So we are kind of looking at more the emergency factor in these budgets. So Just to tell him, I don't know what all the other food shelves are doing, and it is kind of hard to be able to sit down and do that with
everyone. I'm sure it is. So now you've become money counselors in addition
I kind of try to hand it back to people so they can make their own decisions on where they can see places, but to help them point it out and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what's happening is we're having to take the budgets way more seriously than we have before,
mm-hmm.
and really look at what are the basic necessities and so forth.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. Melissa, you want to take that one?
There are many organizations that provide a multitude of services, such as recognizing that a family is repeatedly using a food pantry and then go actually intentionally moving into the process of helping that family consider its overall budget.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly each individual's family's circumstances need to be taken into account. There are many families now who don't even have landline telephones but use cell telephones as a primary means of communication. Well, if that family, some member of that family is looking for work, then keeping that cell phone might be an important budgetary consideration.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm glad that the caller is you know working with families on an individual basis and not setting up some prescriptive rules. You can't have a cell phone, or you can't have cable TV in order to qualify for food services. People are hungry. I think Bonnie's approach is they're hungry. They're hungry.
Right. Yeah. Let's give this one to you, too, Melissa. You mentioned 1987 and the problem with giving that year with corporations, and this is kind of a follow-up on that, or at least a more full explanation of what's going on. From Maryland, I remember there were changes in tax codes that made it less likely for corporations to give their food to food banks. Is that something that is affecting giving?
I have read reports that it is not, in fact, the tax code that affects contributions in food. Food manufacturers, in fact, get an extra tax advantage for giving food to food banks rather than giving it to directly to a school, for example, for preparation for school lunches.
Mm.
But I've read that the whole emphasis on streamlining manufacturing processes and reducing waste in the first place has had an impact on food banks because the corporations are more carefully controlling how much they produce, and therefore they don't have the same surplus that they might have had 20 years ago.
Well, that's correct, and if I might just chime in here,
sure.
What we found is that even though they may have the food, and I think I mentioned this earlier in the hour, those companies oftentimes are cash-strapped as well, and cash flow is so important for them. So even though they might get a better benefit by donating it, they need the cash now, so they sell it, and they get the cash to the bottom line more immediately, and that is another reason why donations from the traditional sources are down for Second Harvest.
Mm-hmm. Do you both want to give, while people are thinking about giving this hour, do you want to direct them to a website where they can get more information for giving, or now that we've increased awareness, you don't want to leave people without a chance to give?
Right. Well, from Second Harvest of Wisconsin perspective, we have a unique online grocery store where individuals can go and literally shop the items and donate money to buy those items for a family in need, and that's onlineharvest.org.
Okay. And what about the Center on Philanthropy, Melissa?
Well, we also collect donations for our own operations, but I think it's more important for donors to consider where they would like their money to go. There are national resources available for donors trying to identify a charity in their own region. One is called GuideStar.org. It's all one word.
GuideStar.org. Okay.
And an donor could say, well, I live in Maryland, for example, to use one of the inquiries, and I'm interested in a food bank there, and
mm-hmm.
then find information about food banks in the Maryland region or even a zip code area within Maryland. That can be also a very helpful tool.
Mm-hmm.
And feedingamerica.org, the national website, will also allow people to put in their zip code and find a food bank that is near them. That they can help support, because I know your listeners are all over, Kathleen. So that's another way for them to find a food bank in their area.
Right. Let's take one more phone call. Carol from Madison. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I have a question for you, Jess, and I'm wondering if either of their organizations has an emphasis on education, nutritional education teach people how to get more nutritional bang for the buck they do have at the grocery store.
Okay.
Well, we do have an emphasis on that, Carol. We serve 1,100 programs. Those programs, in turn, serve the individuals who are hungry. But here at our food bank, we are every week utilizing a nutritionist to come in and actually prepare some of the foods that are in our stock, so that the programs coming to use us know, A, how to use it, and how to understand the nutritional value of that. So we do try and educate the programs that use us so that they in turn can help to educate the people that they are serving. And then one other thing I might add, we have, as is a national trend for Feeding America, a number of kids' cafes. These are meal programs just for kids. We have five of them in eastern Wisconsin, but there are many others throughout Wisconsin. And a major component of that program, in addition to feeding these kids, is providing them with crucial nutrition education, helping them to understand that eating well is a lifetime goal and that they need to start young.
Yeah. Thank you both so much for being with us this hour. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Same to you, Kathleen.
You too, Kathleen.
Yeah, our guest this hour, Bonnie Bellhumer, who is president of America's Second Harvest of Wisconsin, Melissa Brown, managing editor of Giving USA, Center on Philanthropy at Indiana University, and we also thank Maura Daly from Feeding America for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Rob Schroeder for on-air production in Milwaukee, and thanks for calling. I'm Kathleen Dunn. More ahead on the Ideas Network.